Welcome to Indigenized Connections on Air, a podcast brought to you by the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Community Vitality in the area of leadership and civic engagement, and also by the Minnesota Indigenous Leadership Network, which explores the issues that impact tribal communities and leadership throughout Minnesota. I'm your host, Jason Schlender, and I'm the American Indian Leadership and Civic Engagement Educator. My guest today is Joe Naquanabi Jr. Joe is an enrolled citizen of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe and is currently the CEO of the Mille Lacs Band's Corporate Commission, where he created several companies, including the Mille Lacs Band Corporate Ventures. So please welcome Joe Naquanabi Jr. to the podcast.
Hey, good afternoon, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, how you doing these days?
It's going okay, man. I did start this nice beard at the beginning of it. Seemed like every day was like Groundhog Day, you know. Just every day seemed the same, and I needed a daily reminder that change was happening and growth was happening. And it might look ugly and it might look patchy, but there is growth and there is movement happening. So I chose to grow this hideous looking beard effort I have going on here as a daily reminder that, hey man, things are moving, things are growing. It might not feel or look like it at some times, but you know, we'll get through this and I'll get a nice shave when we can get back to some sort of normalcy here. So, but things have been going well. Thanks for asking, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So today's focus is resiliency. Share with us your leadership journey. Hmm.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I had to think back a little bit about where it all kind of started, and I had to go way back into my childhood, actually. And it really started when I met just one of the legends of Minnesota Indian basketball, Jack DeJarlie. He's the head coach of the Red Lake basketball program. And he ended up being the head coach for the 16 and under team that went to the North American Indigenous Games. And I had made that team. I think I was 15 years old at the time. And at that point in time, I knew I was a player. Like I knew I wanted to be a basketball player and I wanted to contribute to the team as a player. But I think meeting him and being on that team really taught me about leadership and made me want to be more than a player and made me want to be a leader. And I really looked up to his, just the way he ran the team. He had these cool goal setting things that he would do with us to make us individually better and then better as a team. He had this great method of storytelling to really bring us into focus when we were working on something. And then he had these great motivational methods. And I just thought that was so cool. I was like, how can this guy have such an impact on the team? And he never even sets a foot on the floor, you know. And it was just the fact that he had all of these leadership qualities and these ways to motivate. And it was at that point in time that I wanted to be that, you know. I wanted to be a leader on the floor. I wanted to be a person that could assist with goal setting and help goal setting. I wanted to be a person that could motivate people. I wanted to bring focus to my fellow teammates' minds, and that's really where I think I fell in love or developed the passion for leadership. And I no longer wanted to just be a player, no longer wanted to just be a cog in the wheel. I wanted to be somebody that was out front leading, and that really propelled me through my athletic career. Went into, kind of took that same mentality into my academics. You know, I was always more interested in what other people were working on and how I could help them shape their projects. And then that rolled straight into my business career. Landing on the ground at Grand Casino, you know, I adopted a servant leadership style is what I call it. You know, I had noticed that I had seen plenty of authoritarian leaders throughout my life, and I always felt like that whole style where you kind of rule with the iron fist and bark orders around, I kind of thought that was played out and outdated. And I thought what people were really looking for was somebody that could listen, somebody that could really understand what they want to accomplish in life, and then really invest all my energy into helping them get better, helping them succeed. And, you know, that's pretty much what I do. Like that's pretty much my role that I play as a leader. But that's really what my journeys look like. It really started there on the basketball court and just wanting to be something more than a player. I wanted to really lead the charge, I guess. So
nice. So when we think about resilience, resilience is something we can hold up in our communities and in our people. What were some key times in your life where you needed to draw upon this inner resilience?
Yeah, that's a good word. That's a good word to use. So that's the capacity to recover quickly from difficulties, right? So I think I think we kind of do that every day as business people. I think you're inevitably going to run into difficulties. And if you dwell on those and you kind of let them eat at you without reacting quickly, I think you're kind of going to get left in the dust. So I think that I've had a lot of repetitions with that on a daily basis. I think the monumental ones, I think in my life, I can remember I came back from an internship. I was interning out in Washington, D.C., and I decided that I wanted to come back home and go to school. And I was really hell-bent on going to Carleton School of Management for my bachelor program. So I enrolled in the program, and they kind of strung me along for a long time. And then eventually they denied me. I remember getting the letter in the mail, and I opened it, and they had denied my entrance into Carleton for the bachelor program. And I just, you know, kind of flipped out a little bit, and I didn't really know what to do. I just had to bounce back. You know, I think that very day I drove up, I was living in the cities at the time, and I drove straight up to St. Cloud State University. That's where my father had graduated from. And I applied there. You know, I busted down the door of somebody and applied and talked to them and told them my situation. And they took me that day. But I think, again, if I would have dwelled on that and let that eat at me, you know, without just reacting, you know, that was probably one of the biggest ones. Another big one happened here in my career. We had as I kind of made my way up through the marketing ladder, as you mentioned there, I started out here as a database marketing manager. Prior to that, I actually interned here in the promotions department, and I was climbing the ladder, doing well. And then a new CEO came in, and for whatever reason, he just didn't like me, kind of, and he actually fired me from my position. I was the VP of marketing at the time, and he had fired me from my position. And I remember going home so pissed off. Who do I call? What do I do? Who can help me? And I just had to kind of slap myself out of that and just think, you know, maybe it's not a problem that he has. Maybe it's a problem that I have. Maybe I'm not strong enough to be in that role. And it was that point in time that I decided to do my MBA. And again, that was all just quick. Like, you know, I spent a little bit of time sulking, maybe an hour. But after that, it was like, you got to get on the horse, and you got to figure out take responsibility for what happened, even if it was a crappy situation and maybe the guy was just a jerk. That didn't really matter. I turned back to self-reflection and figured out, well, what the heck can I do? I just got to make myself better and make my skill set better so that it doesn't happen again. So that was kind of the big one. Or those are two big ones that I think about a lot, actually. I think if I hadn't shown resilience, and if I, you know, I think you, the way you asked the question is cool, because as Indian people, we're kind of built with that. It's in our DNA. So these kind of things come at us, and it's almost, if we just let the process work and let what's in our DNA work, you know, we've been doing this, we've been bouncing back from bigger things than that for centuries. So I think if you just kind of let that happen, it will happen. And I think that's kind of the cool thing that I think has happened for me, as I've had to bounce back from a few of those things.
Yeah. So when we think of those, I think about, you know, those things that you're up against, you know, obviously you had some, obviously a relationship with your, you know, supervisor or your boss or whatever that eventually led to a challenge or those things were. But what I think is what we touched on, you know, is obviously, you know, our history, our, you know, the things that, you know, through our DNA and through the things that indigenous people have endured, you know, one thing that kind of stands true though is the teachings of our elders. It could be just teachings of just people, key people in your community that you look up to. Yeah. When we think of that, what were some key teachings that you relied upon? That, you know, mm-hmm. if there was somebody in your community, or if there was just, you know, even in not necessarily even within your community, sometimes there's just somebody that, you know, that, yeah, that resonates with you, with their, you know, like obviously you mentioned, you know, your former basketball coach, but when we think of like, you know, teachings in some way that, you know, that kind of provide a foundation for us, you know, share with us some of your, those teachings or
you know, sure.
elders or someone.
Yeah, I was lucky, man. I've been blessed with just a lot of amazing people in my life. And when I was growing up, my heroes were all the drum keepers here on Mille Lacs. You know, every spring and fall we were at the dance hall, you know, and I can just think of them, you know, Reggie Gabo, Melvin Eagle, AJ Nickaboyne, Rainey Boyd, you know, all these guys were just, they were my heroes. I mean, those were dudes like how they carried themselves. There's nothing flashy about them, you know, but how they carried themselves was something that I always wanted to emulate. They were humble. They were smart. They were caring. And those were things that I just grew up with that I always wanted to emulate. And I think about my dad was and is very influential in my life. And, you know, from him, I learned work ethic, you know, like I think a lot about generations today, you know, in this whole casino era, you know, people forget how poor we were, you know, and they forget how hard our parents had to work just to make ends meet. You know, I can remember my dad would wake up in the morning and he'd head to the Health and Human Services building to put in a shift. From there, he'd head over to St. Cloud State to take classes in the afternoon. And then after that, he would head over to the VA and he'd put in his time there washing dishes and messing around with the folks over at the VA over there in St. Cloud. And then he would drive home and he would become the overnight security guard for the local golf course. And I think he did that. That was probably his favorite job because he got free golf out of that one. But the point was, I mean, he was just working all the time.
Yeah.
And so his work ethic really rubbed off on me. You know, he always told us, nobody's ever going to give you anything. You gotta take it. And he was really big on education. You know, he said, you know, in your life with the way the band was growing and the way the casinos were growing, you know, he said, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to look to hand you things. And he said, don't take the handouts. He said, go and get your education, do the work, don't take shortcuts. And I think that's always been something that I lived with. A lot of my went-as were important and influential in my life. And thanks to my mom and dad, I had some great ones. My went-as, Moose, one of his famous quotes was that our modern day bows and arrows are degrees and briefcases, you know, and just like went-as do, you know, he would come up to me even as a small boy, you know, he would talk me up and he'd say, hey, this guy's gonna be somebody. My went-as is gonna get his degree and my went-as is gonna come back here and really help. But, you know, like he was always talking me up. So just as a young kid, you know, I had a lot of good went-as putting stuff in my head to kind of stay on a nice path. And we also had great leadership here at the tribe. Marge Anderson in the 90s, I mean, the call was just incessant, man. It was like, go get your degree, go get your credentials, and then come back, bring that back to the community. And she made that call to all of us as we grew up. And it was just like this. So that's kind of what's always kind of been in my head. And I think about all those people, that's kind of been really influential in shaping my life and my leadership style.
Yeah. You mentioned your dad. It's for our listeners there that don't know Joe Senior. Yeah. He's the one thing that I think that I really, really appreciate is just his patience. You know, it's in my own journey to reacquire my language, I sit with him all the time. You know, anytime I get a chance to sit with him during any drum dance or any time to just sit there and, you know, just talk about, you know, obviously we catch up on golf and different life stories, of course, but you know, he's one of our foundations of our language and our pursuit to revitalize it. You know, we've lost a lot of our speakers in the last, say, 10 years. You know, some of the ones that were really kind of carrying that, you know, carrying the load for us, and you know, so really, a lot of us, even in, you know, in the Wisconsin, you know, Minnesota, in this, you know, Michigan area, even into Ontario, really rely on, you know, your dad for his work and obviously respect his, you know, his journey too, you know, with, he always talks about it all the time, just being, his time, he served in the military and, yep. You know, that personal sacrifice is just something that we just, you know, kind of humbles us, you know, like, you know, it's always, he always carries himself in such a, you know, real humble way, you know, like that kind of is that reflection, you know, like, just like what you said, he's not all about show or anything, or, you know, not real flashy or anything, but he's just probably one of the most kindest, most patient men that, you know, that I've ever known. I, you know. So anytime you, and it's, you know, for those of us that are kind of in this language, culture, vitalization, even just for even rectifying your life, if you've been addicted, you know, if you're going through addiction, it's hard to approach some of our elders because you're afraid of making a mistake. Mm-hmm. So there's always that little bit of, you know, hesitancy, and, you know, so I've had, it took a little while to kind of approach them. And, but then once you kind of cozy up, and then he sits there and tells you some stories, and then he actually seeks you out every time, you know, kind of goes out of his way to shake your hand and kind of reassure you. And, you know, and then you also mentioned, your wet ends, you know, for our listeners out there, that word means like your namesake, you know, it's like somebody that's in your life that, you know, that it's a reciprocal relationship. You know, you take care of one another for the expanse of your life, and it provides an extended family. So all those things are crucial, and, you know, to living a good life. So I want to shift gears a little bit, kind of focus on this COVID-19 stuff. Obviously, it's shut down, you know, a lot of things, right? So our casinos are you know, closed at the moment. You know, a lot of our, you know, what they classify as non-essential businesses are shut down. But I wanted to kind of get your, have you reflect on how you've coped with some of those challenges from a personal perspective within your family, but also, you know, being the CEO of the corporate ventures. I mean, you have some huge decisions to, you made some huge decisions, but you got a lot of things looking forward to. So if you could just reflect on that.
Sure. Yeah. I'll start with the family or personal stuff. You know, I think for me, the main thing was kind of like the, you know, the old stoic kind of mentality, you know, control what you can control and don't worry about the rest. And that's typically one of the ways I try to live anyway. But I think in this particular instance, that's really been the mantra for me: control what you can control and don't worry about the rest. And I think the first thing that came to mind for me right away was just self-care. You know, there's a lot going on where I'm relied upon by my family. I'm relied upon by the businesses and the community, you know, my father, you know, so I'm no good if I'm not taking care of myself. So I think that's one thing I can control on a daily basis. So I've really doubled down on my running. So I was training for Grandma's marathon, and I'm still going to run the virtual marathon now. I won't be on the streets of Duluth like I'd like to be, but I've continued with my running, increased my sleep. So typically, what my sleep patterns have been, I've been just doubling down on how much sleep I get. Really trying to sharpen my mind. So I've been reading a heck of a lot, both COVID related and non-COVID related, fiction, non-fiction, doesn't matter. I keep feeding my brain, and making sure I'm keeping my mind sharp so that I know what's going on. So those have been the big things personally, just massive double down on self-care, making sure I'm not getting too down or too off kilter there. So trying to make sure I stay in balance. On the business side, the tough decision, I thought the tough decision was over with, you know, closing the casinos. That was, that was very, very difficult, you know, but I think this decision to reopen and when we reopen, I think that's actually much, much harder. So, and that's something that it's something that we're contemplating and have been contemplating. You know, there were really like three, I look at it in three big waves so far. You know, wave one was kind of the shutdown, and what our focus was there was really on our community first, making sure we keep the community safe and we're not inviting the spread into our community, which our businesses have a tendency to do because we have a lot of folks visit. But also, how do we protect our associates? So in that wave, it was really about, you know, making sure we paid our associates through the first 4 weeks until relief came from the state and federal government. So really got them through that really tough time, and then helped them kind of soar into the relief packages that were out there. And then wave two for me and for, I guess, for us was really at that point trying to, you know, there's a little bit of a grieving process, I think. You know, it's shocking and tough. And at the same time, we had to gear up to try to get as much relief as we could for the small businesses. So all of the different CARES Act relief that was out there, we were trying to pile that up for all of our businesses. Also trying to explore other things that the casinos could go into. So it was really like this really defensive wave, like how do we play defense at this point and make sure that our businesses can stay viable and prepare themselves for the next wave, which is kind of what I feel we're in right now, which is the reopening phase. And at this point in time, you know, we're kind of beyond all the grief, and we really kind of turned it into and accepted it as a blessing. So there's a, again, control what you can control. You can view this in a number of ways, but we chose to view it as a blessing and to take the time that we have here while everything's kind of grinded to a halt to really sharpen up everything. So we're looking at our organizational structure. We're looking at our strategies. We're looking at all of the different things that we think can propel the company, not just from the reopening phase, but also what do we want to look like for the next decade or two? And this unbelievable opportunity we have right now to really spend time in that. Normally there's just so much stuff going on. You're kind of caught in this whirlwind where the amount of time you can spend on that stuff is really minimal. Well, right now the whirlwind's gone. So we're really stepping into figuring out how we want the company to look going forward, how it will provide best for the band. And so that's kind of been the tactic for me. Pretty much stay busy, stay focused, and control what I can control, you know?
Right. Yeah, when I think of like that, when I first, you know, when the directives came down from, you know, it was, I don't know, to me, it seemed kind of like here with just personally within our own house, it was seemed like a kind of almost like a slumber party atmosphere, almost like, yeah. You know, so we just loaded up on snacks and we were watching movies and, you know, kind of keeping my kids close, you know, and we were just like thinking it was just going to last a week, you know, or you know, how long is this really going to last, you know? But then as time you get kind of sick of eating the junk food and, you know, and the movies get played out. And then you find yourself like, what else can I do? You know? So you start, you know, that's why I'm thankful for, you know, being able to get outside and just, get out and spearfish, you know, that's a big thing for me, was just to be able to get outside and do stuff like that, and just to, you know, try to stay busy too, you know, because work keeps us busy.
Yeah,
you know, we're fortunate to be provided the opportunity to work remotely. So
yeah,
you know, so that's, you know, but at the same time, I think about, you know, those families that don't have that opportunity, you know, that are are not as fortunate. So I really share that with my kids, you know, like, you know, because they're just loving it because it's school's done and they just,
yeah.
So we're trying to keep them on a schedule too, you know, it's a little difficult, you know, it's, because it's, you're asked to be a homeschool teacher, you know, and so you're doing your work, you're living your life, now you're responsible for trying to educate your children too. So it's
crazy. We also got lucky that we bought a puppy during this. So we have a new dog in the house. And so that was like, and he came at like the right, like the perfect time. Like as you mentioned from the, on the top, you know, there's four girls in the house. So you can imagine after the movies got old and you can only watch so many TikTok videos, you know, things started to get crazy in the house. Well, then he came and he's been exactly what we needed to lift our spirits and keep the kids busy.
What kind of dog did you get?
You got a husky.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in the same discussion. I think we're probably a couple weeks late, but you know, we've read those articles too, you know, like it's a great time to, you know, to get a dog for anybody that wants to raise a dog because you have the time to put into training and socialization and get outside and, you know, as before, you know, that's one thing we struggled with was just our time management for, you know, we love dogs, you know, within our family too, but we just get so busy with life, you know, it just, sometimes you don't, it's never the intent to neglect anybody, to neglect you know, your pets or anything like that. But, you know, but you want to be able to, you know, give them the time that they deserve. And obviously they're part of your family, you know, so.
Yeah.
So as we reflect on your leadership journey, what advice do you have for aspiring young leaders?
I think for young leaders and old leaders, maybe especially old leaders like you and I. You know, I always say that it's not that hard to be a normal leader. Like, I think there's a bunch of normal leaders walking around. But what I always kind of encourage of our folks and what I've encouraged of the youth that I get to talk to is you don't want to be normal. You want to be abnormal. Like, abnormal people, abnormal leaders create abnormal results. And so anything you can do to kind of make yourself different than everybody else is really what I encourage. And I usually talk about the really five things that people can invest in to sort of transform their leadership skills or just transform how they go about life. And the first thing is really to feed your mind. So the mantra that I have is leaders are readers. So you know, 30 minutes a day, if you're not reading something, I mean, it doesn't have to be boring. Matter of fact, it shouldn't be boring. It could be nonfiction. It could be fiction. It could be magazines. It could be comic books. I have a comic book up right back here, Batman. I have the Harvard Business Review here. I have a pile of books over here, Seth Godin and other things. But feed your mind. I think every single day you need to be feeding your mind. So that's one thing I recommend to people. You can start to pass a lot of the normal leaders up just with that step alone. The second thing kind of relates to what I was talking about earlier, but the second thing is to strengthen your body. So, you know, again, another good Jack DeJarlie reference. You know, he would always say, if you physically get tired, that means that your mind had already broke down, you know, an hour ago. You know, so your mental and your physical body are all connected. So anything you can do to strengthen your body, you know, you don't have to train for a marathon like I am, certainly. But just making sure you get your, whatever it is, 10,000 steps, lift some weights, shoot some hoops, do something where you're strengthening your body. If your body collapses, obviously you're not going to be any good to anybody. Find great role models is the next step. So I always think that when you're a leader, it could be lonely, right? Like you feel like you're alone. You feel like you might have some hesitation or anxiety to ask for help, because, you know, people sometimes think that the leader should always have the answer. And I think that's where just good role models come in. So if, you know, I always encourage people, I'm like, look, write down two leaders. One is somebody that you could talk to tomorrow. So one good role model that's accessible to you that you could talk to tomorrow. You look up to them, you admire them, you like the way they live their life. Write that name down and at some point, talk to those folks. Like, they can help you. And then the other leader or the other role model that you could write down is somebody that's just out there in the universe that you might not be able to talk to tomorrow, but you could certainly research. So if it's Barack Obama, for example, maybe you can't talk to him, but you can certainly follow him on Twitter. You can certainly read his books. And there's a bunch of things that having these folks as role models it's important, so that you don't feel alone. You have somebody to go to when you need help, and you just have other people to emulate as you kind of head through your leadership journey. So I think finding role models is important. The next step is to get in proximity. So we all know that there are folks out there that can advance your projects. So if there's something that you're working on or something that you want to bring into your company, your community, into the world, there are folks out there that can help with that. And if you can get in proximity of those folks, whether it's people they know, connections that you both know, the closer you can get to those folks and the closer proximity you can get to the people that can help move your project along, that's something that really helps great leaders stand out, is to get in proximity. And then the final thing is to give back and give back more than you ever expect to receive. So whatever that cause is that gets you up in the morning or that you think about a lot, if it's emergency response or it's the local fire department or it's the Red Cross or it's, you know, we have all these different things that you could contribute time to. And, you know, that's like a big thing about leadership. Like if you can practice that on a daily basis where you're constantly giving back, whether it's your time, your money, any other resources that you have, if you're just giving and you're not always expecting something back. Yeah, you know, that's kind of like I think the world writes itself when you're doing that. Like, eventually the karma kind of catches up to you and all of a sudden things start to get delivered to you and those blessings come back. So those are the five things I talk about a lot and that I recommend to both. And again, it's both leaders, young and old. Like, I think if you're not constantly transforming your skill set, you know, you're just getting passed up and that you're less and less effective when you're not doing that. So those are the things.
our last question here today is obviously, you know, looking at post COVID-19 in our, you know, the response, you know, response from the state, from the tribes, what ways do you see tribes connecting through economic development post COVID-19?
I think that one of the shocking things that we're going to start to see is that how reliant we are on Indian gaming. So I think the, you know, I think one of the biggest things that I think about up until this point, it's all been theoretical. Like theoretically, the state might open a casino in Minneapolis, and that's going to hurt our business by X percent. Theoretically, you know, there's been all these, theoretically, the state's going to close gaming or open up online gaming. You know, there's all these theoretical examples that we game plan for, kind of these doomsday scenarios or, you know, we do goal setting, but we also do something called fear setting, where we try to list the things that we fear the most. And to this point, all of that stuff's been theoretical, and now we have an actual real case study. So when you look at how reliant we are on Indian gaming and how shocking that's going to be to tribes, I think it will motivate people to diversify. And, you know, we've tried a number of things and a number of ways to diversify our revenue streams. We haven't done nearly enough. And I think that kind of journey or that, you know, that desire to diversify is a lot harder than people think. And what that's going to do is it's going to bring more tribes together on that front. You know, there are tribes that are a little further along than other tribes. And I think the ability to collaborate together, I think, is going to increase. You know, these are things that we've been talking about and hoping for. And I think it's been really hard for people to kind of get over the hump. And I think this is one of those things, I hope, that shocks the system a little bit in Indian country. And we decide that we're not, Indian gaming might be this great blessing, but it's not the be all end all. You know, our great chief here from Mille Lacs, Art Gabo, said that, you know, that gaming is just a tool for further economic development. And he wanted us to view the casino properties in that way. And I think more and more tribes are going to buy into that same sort of mentality. And I think there'll be a lot more collaboration on how to vet deals, how to look at deals, how to combine capital on deals. And that's really what I think will be kind of the focus probably for the next decade in Indian country. And I think it was going there anyway. I think this thing just kind of, this will just speed it up. It'll kind of pour some gasoline on the fire. And I think we'll see a lot more diversification efforts across Indian country.
Well, I want to thank you for your time today, Joe. Appreciate your journey, your thoughts and your wisdom and, you know, obviously, you know, your contribution to the Mille Lacs band. And, you know, they've really, you know, looking back at, you know, how much they've grown in the last 10, 15 years, you know, it's really, you know, you're a true valuable asset to their, you know, obviously to the business, but also to, you know, many, many families, you know, are beneficiaries of your work. So just wanted to share my appreciation for your work. So Miigwech for being here today.
Yeah.
Miigwech to Joe Naquinabi Jr. for joining today's podcast. To learn more about the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe response to COVID-19 pandemic, please visit millacsband.com/services/COVID-19-information. For the latest on Mille Lacs corporate ventures, go to mlcv.com. And to learn more about leadership and civic engagement, go to extension.umn.edu/community-development/leadership-and-civic-engagement, where you will find more resources on growing leaders and strengthening leadership. Make sure to follow the Minnesota Indigenous Leadership Network on Facebook, www.facebook.com/umn.indigenous.leadership.network, to stay up to date on research and resources for tribal communities and tribal leadership. We hope that you will join us again for another episode of Indigenized Connections on Air.